Yay!
Did you guys all hear that?
Successful?
Yes.
Yep, yes. We sure did. Okay. Excellent. And it looks like there's a whole bunch more people that have joined, and we are off to the races. So first of all, welcome everybody to our first conference call of four. Thank you for signing up. We're going to have some fun. I'm going to answer all your questions. And right for this call, right now, we have four questions that were submitted by two people that we can answer. My guess is this will take up most of the hour, so make a note that if you want to submit questions in the future so that you are sure to have your questions answered during the calls, please do that in advance. If we have time left over, though, we'll make room for additional questions. So hi, everyone. I'm not going to have you introduce yourself because it'll burn through a lot of time. And just know that everyone that's on the call I've worked with before, and some of you recently, some of you not for several months, some of you I've worked with for years. And let's get started. What I tend to do is list the person who asked the question. If you want to submit a question in the future and you don't want your name mentioned, then just let me know via email. And so hopefully it's okay that I'm doing this because I didn't say that before. But I want to start with Kelly. Kelly, are you on the call?
I am on the call.
All right. So that means you're going to be in the hot seat. Are you okay with being in the hot seat?
Yes, I'm totally fine.
And you probably don't even know what that means. That means that I'm going to facilitate you.
Okay.
I've tried facilitating a whole group via phone before, and it just gets a little chaotic, and people talk over each other, and everybody's waiting to be polite before they speak. And so I just tend to put one person in the hot seat, facilitate them, answer their questions, and then at some point I'll ask the entire group if they have any follow-up questions afterwards. So everybody pay attention. Everyone imagine that I'm facilitating you, and then know that I'm going to ask if anybody has follow-up questions. So be sure to be on the lookout for anything that piques your curiosity or leaves you confused. So Kelly, I think that what you asked me is really important because I think it's something that everyone struggles with. The first question you asked is, what do I feel?
Mm-hmm.
When I ask myself how I feel, the answer is often, I don't know. When my thinking brain starts trying to pick everything apart because it really wants to come up with an answer, right?
Yes, that's true.
Right. I wonder if repressing fear for so long has resulted in my access to emotions being muddled. And the answer is an emphatic yes, absolutely. And I find that this is the biggest holdback that people have when they get to the four-step art of fear method. You know, just saying the first step, like it's normal and natural to feel uncomfortable, you know, that's fun, that's interesting, that's insightful, you know, it's profound every time, at least for me it is. The second part is what you're talking about, the second step, like what do I feel, where do I feel it, how strong is it? We just don't know what we feel. And then we start to use our minds to try and figure it out. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yes, exactly.
The reason why, and this is new, that I started offering a membership program is to have access to all my content that I've created without having to piecemeal it together. And the ABC Guide to Feeling Emotions is what is going to help you with this. It's a one-week program, a few minutes a day. I originally created it for soldiers who have come back from war. I created it as part of the PTSD course. I was hired by a Wounded Warrior Project to create a PTSD course, and it became really clear when I started working with more soldiers that a lot of these guys in particular have gotten to the point where they've lost the ability to feel anything, period. And so originally I created it for just those types of people that are just so in their head that they can't feel anything. They don't even know if they feel hot or cold at this point. They're so desensitized to their bodies. So the ABC Guide is a one-week program, step-by-step, to help you learn how to feel. And everyone that signed up for this, I think with one exception, signed up for the membership program, and so you have that ABC Guide to draw from. So that's the first part. The second question you had is this a common problem? And you wrote, it's probably not a problem, but it seems like one. Absolutely, Kelly, it's a problem, right?
Okay.
Because, you know, in step two of the Art of Fear method, if we can't locate what it is that we feel, then we're never going to have a chance to actually feel it. If we just default immediately to our heads and just start focusing or scanning or trying to figure it out, then that's another form of resistance. It's another way to not have to feel whatever it is that we feel. And your brain can lie. Your body doesn't. Like, your body knows what it feels, but your brain may interpret the feeling a certain way. You know, it may think that it's one thing when often it's another. And so what we tend to do when we're looking in our bodies by using our heads for what we feel, the brain will make something up, you know, will create something that may not even be real or not there, which is why it's so important for this to be a physical process. It has to be an embodied process. So one of the ways, you know, the ABC guide is great, definitely encourage that, but now I'm going to talk about other stuff that you can do. The other thing that you can do, Kelly, and everybody that has the same issue, is don't search for a name. Don't search for a voice. Don't assign it anything. Like, you can just have it be a feeling instead. It's kind of like when I was in Antarctica, I jumped into the ocean. It was in November, you know, and you jump out. And you're like jumping around going, you know, you're just kind of freaking out. And there's just like moments like that where you feel something and it's so strong that you can't, it transcends language. Like, you don't get out and say, oh, well, I seem to be experiencing, you know, distressed capillaries and my skin feels really sensitive. And like, no, you don't have a conversation. It's not a heady experience. It's a physical experience where you're just jumping around screaming cold. You know, or another example is when you eat something that's disgusting, you know, you just go, ugh, you know, you don't say, oh, well, this is rather unpleasant and, you know, it tastes really, you know, bitter and the right side of my tongue just seems to really reject this, but the left side of my tongue, like, you don't have that kind of conversation. And so oftentimes when you're doing step two of the Art of Fear method, what I recommend you do is, instead of searching for answers, just give it a noise. Now, Kelly, okay. I'm just going to pause there for a moment. Mm-hmm. Like, let's do this together. And let me think about how I want to do this. Like, I have pain in my neck. And I would say that 70% of the pain in my neck is physical. It's because I'm typing by looking down. It's because I have, you know, squished joints. And 30% of it is emotional. And if I were to do the four steps around my physical pain, normal and natural to feel this way, you know, I type wrong. I have, you know, I've had whiplash 10 times. Like, I have a compromised neck. And I also have emotions that I haven't been dealing with, right? That's showing up in my neck, that's the first step. The second step, what do I feel? Well, where I feel it is in my neck, but what I feel is, I don't want to give it a name. I don't want to be in my head about it. So what I feel is, I just feel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that can be your answer. And then it's not you back in your head searching for it. So tell me what it is that you feel right now that's just emotionally uncomfortable, and just give it a sound.
I feel tightness in my jaw, and I think the sound that I would just give it is like, ugh,
ugh. So there's your step two. I feel, ugh,
okay.
It's in my jaw. And see how you're not, like, in your head searching.
Mm-hmm.
And this way, when you get to step three, you know, do you have any resistance to it? You also don't have to be in your head. You can just notice. And the resistance can also just have a sound, or it can have a single sentence like, oh, I wish this would go away. Or, you know, just come, let the answer come to you. Like, what is your reaction to that, ugh?
I want to accept it.
Okay. I want to accept it.
Yeah.
Which is not the same as accepting it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right? I want to want to accept it, but what really is going on for you?
I'm not
ignoring
it. Yeah.
Okay. I'm resisting it. You know, we don't even need to give that a name either. You know, for me, oftentimes it just shows up as, I just wish it would go away. Like, just whatever comes to you, it may be words. I find with resistance, it's for me, it shows up as words. Like, there's no right or wrong way of doing this. Everybody's different. So mm-hmm. how's it showing up for you? Just let the answer come to you. Tell me about your resistance.
I wish my jaw would just relax.
Right. And then you become like that husband that says, just relax, mama, you know, calm mm-hmm. the F down, right? And we know how that goes from there, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I just wish it would calm down. So notice the reaction. And is the worst feeling the ugh in your jaw, or is the worst feeling the I wish it would just go away, relax?
Oh, definitely the second one.
The second one. You know, it's so interesting, the more I do this, that it seems like 95, even plus 99% of the time, the resistance is the worst feeling than the feeling itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the first step kind of helps us accept it a little bit more and come to terms with it, but it's not enough. You know, the fourth step is here to help you just spend some time resisting it. And so let me do some voice dialogue with you, and mm-hmm. let's just kind of go all the way with this. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one searching for answers. Who am I speaking to?
The one searching for answers.
All right. When it comes to emotions, right, just do your thing. Search for answers, like that pain, that ugh feeling. What can you find?
Confusion.
All you find is confusion. Trying to put the piece of the puzzle together, one piece after the next.
Yes, there are no answers. It's just bits and pieces.
Right. And is it helpful? You searching
no.
for answers? Yeah. Not really. I mean, it's interesting, right? You know, we could talk and think about this with friends and go to doctors. And, you know, I think that there's some merit, especially if it's like a physical pain like my neck. But when it comes to like the emotional side of it, you know, it becomes very confusing. And I can search and search and search. And we think that if we understand why you have this emotional discomfort, why I have this emotional discomfort, that somehow I can control it or eradicate it. And it's a long and lengthy process. Like you know, the rabbit hole that you lead her down it's a lot of effort with not much merit. You know, there's easier ways to gain her emotional relief.
Yeah.
All right. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice of awareness of what I'm feeling. Who am I speaking to?
Awareness of what I'm feeling.
Okay. Now, notice that you're not the voice of the one who's focused on what you're feeling or trying to find what I'm feeling and try to figure out what I'm feeling. You're just awareness itself of what I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of more of what we're going for in step two of the Art of Fear method. So as the voice of the one whose awareness of what I'm feeling, tell me what else you notice.
I notice that her lower back is tight. I notice that her lower back is worse than her jaw.
Oh. Is this not expected?
I think that I was focused on one thing, and now that I'm more in tune, I'm realizing there are more things that I'm aware of that were not showing up before.
Right. So you're just awareness itself, and it's less about focus or the mind or trying to figure it out or trying to search for answers or understand anything. You're just awareness, which is it's like very animalistic. You know, animals live in a state of awareness. And the ABC guide, bringing it back to that, seeks to help nurture you as a voice with people. Is there anything else that you're aware that you're feeling?
I'm aware that I'm feeling calm. She's feeling calm.
What was
calm.
The word? Okay.
Calm.
Okay. Calm. Okay. And then also there was an awareness before of resistance to the feeling in her jaw. Is there resistance to the feeling in her back? Are you aware of that as well?
No. No, yes, I'm aware, and no, there is no resistance.
Okay. So either it's just vanished or, I mean, sometimes just to see it is to stop it. You know, there's definitely two schools of thought on that. You know, some psychologists would be the second you have an insight about some stuck place, then that's it. You know, you're no longer stuck. But habits die hard and you just slip into unconsciousness again, but you'll never be the same. And, you know, sometimes it takes like being aware of the same aha moment 20 times, 30 times before real change gets affected. And that's kind of the second school of thought. But mm-hmm. just the awareness itself, you know, is can be a very profound experience. So, and then there's step four of the Art of Fear method. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's feeling whatever the feeling is. Who am I speaking to?
The one who's feeling back pain and a tight jaw.
All right. So let's do it one at a time. Let's start with the back pain because that seems bigger. So you're the voice of the one who's feeling the back pain. Who am I speaking to?
I am the one who's feeling back pain.
All right. So just do your thing without trying to get rid of it, about trying to let it go or replace it with painlessness or calm it down or release it or anything like that. Just let it do its thing, and you're just feeling it. And spend some intimate time with that pain. And there may be a physical component to it, and then there's an emotional component to it. And just spend some time with both. You know, maybe the spine is a little wacky from a few ski crashes, for sure here. So just do your thing. And hopefully everybody that's on the call is also spending some quality time right now with whatever it is that they're feeling. It's physical, emotional. Like spending some quality time with an upset child, a body part that's trying to get your attention. I remember back in the early 90s when Kristen had a series of knee surgeries, one right after another, 3 ACL reconstructions in 3 years. And that didn't set her back, but what set her back was patella tendonitis. It was so painful. And she went to a hypnotherapist, and she just had a conversation with her knee. And that conversation, just with 2 hypnotherapy sessions, is the only thing that actually worked to resolve that pain. Not surgery. She had 2 surgeries for it. I mean, just to have a conversation, just to listen to this ache, this pain, this emotional discomfort, this physical discomfort, have that conversation, that loving kindness, consideration, you know, can really change everything. So, how's it going?
It's going well. I can feel that the consideration that I'm giving that pain it's almost diffusing the pain. It's still there, but it doesn't, it's not as biting.
Right. And one way that we can show our body parts love is to take deep breaths and breathe into it. You know, not trying to replace the pain with anything more calm, but just kind of give that pain some love, you know, in the form of oxygen is a nice gift. So there could also be a breathing exercise involved with step four of the Art of Fear method. And what's interesting in all this is at no point have we mentioned fear. You know, we're not even necessarily mentioning emotions, or even though lower back pain is notoriously tied to repressed anger. You know, you don't even need to identify that, oh, this is repressed anger, oh, this is because, you know, of the fight that I had last week with my husband. Like, none of that needs to be identified. The only thing that matters is the feeling itself, and can you spend some quality time with it? And in doing this, we can just simplify the Art of Fear method down to just not involve the brain, not involve searching for answers, not involve trying to pick everything apart. It's just an honest relationship with whatever it is that we're feeling without thought. We become in our bodies and we have an intimate experience with it. And then now let's also do this with the jaw, the tightness in the jaw. So shift your focus. And I heard myself say the word focus. That's not the right language, but allow me please to speak through the voice of the one feeling the tightness in her jaw. Who am I speaking to?
The one feeling the tightness in her jaw.
Okay. So spend some quality time now feeling this without trying to change it in any way, resist it, get rid of it, calm it down. While you're doing this, let me just open up the doors to the rest of the group. Anybody have any questions, clarifications, or anything they want to offer?
So this is Leslie, so I guess we burned through my first question also. So,
and, you know, we're going to go over your question too, because we're, because there's something else in your question that I think is important for us to discuss. But do you have any other questions right now?
I don't. I just find it enlightening, your presentation, in terms of how it illuminates what I thought the issue was.
And what is being illuminated for you?
Being in my head and getting out of, if I reflect on my question, which doesn't on the face of it seem a lot like Kelly's question, but it was 100%. When I think about, like, differentiating between kinds of worry, it's just all, it's all cognitive. So I've taken some notes to try.
Okay. You know, the more I do this, the more I realize the biggest form of resistance out there by far in a way is we're just in our head about our emotions. And, you know, we're a culture of just monkey-minded people where everybody's just so in their heads. Well, that's a sign and a symptom of just an absolute unwillingness to feel our emotions. That's the unfortunate side effect. And, you know, we learn this as kids, like, okay, if I'm in my head and then I don't, first of all, I get better grades in school, and second of all, I don't have to deal with those pesky emotions, right? And so it's just so ingrained. And, you know, finishing up with Kelly, too, she wrote, doing the work correctly, she put parentheses around it, or I put parentheses around it, is still a struggle. Old habits are strong. And I put parentheses around it because there is no correct way. But my process is just only about being in the body, only because ultimately, you know, I'm calling myself a fear and anxiety specialist. What I'm doing is I'm helping getting people out of their heads and into their bodies. Like, that's the kind of bigger picture work. I'm also holding people accountable to their shit, like helping people own their shit. This is an own your shit practice, right? Mm-hmm. And the shit is in your body, like the emotions, the fear, the anger, the sadness, the feelings of unworthiness, the shame, the guilt, like all those things that we typically don't deal with, you know, that we're in our heads about so we don't have to feel them. You know, that's part of the process too. But always and forever, the four-step Art of Fear method, I just want you to recognize that this is a physical experience, not a mental experience. And the more you can just simplify it, and, you know, one way to simplify it is to not try to search for answers, but just kind of give it a sound, the better. Because then you won't keep reverting back to your head. And that's the old habit that is strong. So, Leslie, before we move on to your questions, does anybody have anything else they want to say about what we've explored so far? And, you know, it's counterintuitive. Let me just say that. Like, I teach this stuff. I've been learning it and teaching it for decades now. And I got on the plane the other day, and it was a chaotic plane. There were a whole bunch of screaming babies. You know, I got seated back by the toilet. Like, it just sucked. And something was bothering me. I can't remember what it was now. And I sat down in my chair, and I'm like, okay, well, I have 2 hours on this flight. Can I put my noise cancellation headphones on, and can I just calm the F down, right? That's immediately where my brain went, and I started doing things to calm down that, you know, are like breathing exercises and just like relaxing my shoulders, relaxing my head. And I stopped myself. I'm like, oh, for the love of God, I can't believe I'm doing this. And it was even counterintuitive to me. And instead, I didn't necessarily do the four steps because I've done it so much. I just turned towards the discomfort, turned towards the part of me that was just stressed out and frazzled and irritated with the screaming babies. And I just spent some quality time with those feelings and did that instead. And it really, I had to consciously choose to do it though, because even for me, it's so ingrained to do the opposite. And it just worked for me. It works for me, and I think it works for you guys. Otherwise, you wouldn't sign up for these calls. Just so much better. You know, it isn't a resistance to anything. It isn't spiritual bypassing. It isn't trying to override a natural sensation of irritation or discomfort. You know, and it calms you down without leading to inadvertently problems down the road. But we have to just really presence ourselves and choose to do this practice instead of what we're taught or what we're habitually patterned to do. And that's kind of where we're going next. Anybody have anything else they want to say before we move on? All right. Leslie, I'm going to read this. I've been working the voices for about a year, sometimes with more vigilance and sometimes with less. But I usually recognize when I need to stop and check in. My question is about knowing whether I'm being accurate and identifying the voice I'm in. Confusing. Is it the one who worries or is it the one who needs to control? And I kind of cut out a few sentences. So basically, you're confused and you're trying to identify the voice you're in. So this is where I wanted to take what we already explored a step further. Now, I'm a voice dialogue facilitator, and when I'm not around, I don't actually think in terms of the voices, and I don't expect you to either. You know, even I don't do that, and it's probably because it's too complicated without a facilitator. I see that the work that we do here during these calls, during private sessions, during my live events and all that, the online courses, like that's when you start to compartmentalize your life in terms of these 10,000 different voices. But when you're doing the Art of Fear method and spending some time, you know, you don't want to compartmentalize things anymore. You know, how this facilitation tool can serve us is many different ways. But the one way for sure that it won't serve us is if we then start to kind of identify what voice is here, because then we're back in our head and we're, you know, like when I'm facilitating you guys, I'm really engaged mentally as well in an attempt so that you don't have to be, you know, so that you can be more of an embodied version of this voice. Like I'm the one that will come up with the questions to ask. I'm the one that will see what voice wants to speak next. If you have that job to be facilitator and facilitated, it's just going to get really busy and complicated. So in order to keep it more simple, what I'm saying is don't look for what voice it is that's trying to speak. Just look for the feeling or the thought, or just be an observer of your life, but not necessarily an observer of the voices. Does it seem clear why, just to keep things simple? Leslie, I'll ask you that.
Yes, it does. And in fact, I was, thinking too, but even just what we did with Kelly actually seemed to clarify a lot of that for me.
Okay. And I have a lot of people asking me all the time, like, what voice do you think that was? And, you know, it's interesting to wonder that, but it does keep us in our heads. And when I'm facilitating, too, I'm the amalgamation of so many different voices. I'm in the voice of the self and the no self and the conscious apex of that, in the voice of the facilitator, in the voice of the one who's looking for an opening, in the voice that I have to speak to. It's like it's, you know, I hope that I make it look easy, but anybody that tries to facilitate this dialogue, if you've tried to do it with friends or family, you probably find that it's kind of difficult to do. And especially if you're doing it with yourself, it gets difficult. I don't even do it. So then the second part of your question is about your confusion. You know, are you the one who worries, or are you the one who needs to control? And I'd like to address that next. And then you also brought in the major difference between worrying about, say, what someone thinks of me versus worrying about losing my job versus worrying about the world ending due to climate change. You know, oh boy. But maybe not. And I think that I have a series of voices that I'd like us to do that kind of takes this all into consideration. The different kinds of worry, and then the difference between the one who worries and the one who needs to control the worry. So you ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. Big hot seat here. And when we say worry, it's just another name for fear. You know, when
right.
you say I'm worried about losing my job, I'm afraid of losing my job. You know, does the word worry resonate with you more, or does the word I'm afraid of losing my job resonate with you more? Because we can use either.
I guess for me it's worry, because it seems tied closer to anxiety.
Okay, like recirculating fear.
Yeah.
Right. And so worry is fear that's just going round and round. Let's call it worry, though, because that's more specific. Fear tends to, we tend to interpret it as being some sharp adrenaline, you know, spike. And worry is kind of more of a slow drip, constant round and round. So allow me, please, to speak through the voice of the one who's worried of what others say about me. Who am I speaking to?
The one who worries about what others say about me.
And is it what they say or what they think about you? Which has a bigger heat?
It's what they think.
Okay, then let's get more specific. You're worried about what others think about you. Who am I speaking to?
The one who worries about what others think about me.
Right. Let's all spend about 20 seconds in silence and just notice if you show up physical, just as a feeling, or if you're in her thoughts or his thoughts, and you're showing up more as a mental, like worried about this person or that person or story, belief, all of that. So 20 seconds in silence. Just be you. This is an interesting voice to facilitate, I got to tell you, because it's there for me. So tell me how you're showing up in her life.
Hypervigilance.
Why do you have to be so hypervigilant?
Because I need to protect her from the bad things that can happen when people think bad things.
Okay. Now, you're the one who worries about this. There's also the voice of the one who tries to control what others think about Leslie. And that's another voice, and we're going to speak to that one soon. But you're just the one who worries. What merit do you offer her? What, you know, what's your positive gift to her? How do you help her?
I help her so she's not blindsided.
Right. Because if she's just ignorant, head in the sand like an ostrich, then doesn't know what's going on. Like she needs to kind of have her wits about her. And, you know, there's no more T-Rexes, or you don't really have to worry about getting eaten by a lion, but you do have to worry about getting eaten by other people's opinions of her. And so, you know, you're now focused on just fear of these external threats and people's opinions. And, you know, if their opinions are poor, she doesn't do as well successfully. She doesn't do as well. She doesn't have as many friends. The people in her life want to spend less time with her. Like, you know, there are some real threats here. It's not just perception. Like, you have a right to exist, don't you? And you're keeping her on her toes.
Right.
And yet she has an issue with you. And it's not so much that she has an issue with you, but she wants to know the difference between you and some other worry. Or does she have an issue with you?
She does, because she would like me to chill out.
Okay.
She believes that I'm not truthful in the things that I tell her.
And there's, have I done full self with Leslie?
No, I don't think so.
Right. And so there's a whole voice called false self that I don't often do in ski camps. Let's just give that one a rest. But so you're the worry about what others think about me. Have you been around since she was a little girl?
Yes.
And you're part of the ego development. Actually, it's called level 3 ego development, which kicks in around 12 to, say about 20 years old, where kids are really, really worried about what others think of them. They want to fit into a group. They want to wear the same jeans that everybody wears. They don't want to be seen in glasses. They don't want to be perceived as different. You know, you're very, very strong in teenagers. But when the self gets to be an adult and you're still sticking around, then I think that the adult realizes that something's gone wrong. You know, maybe she's gotten stuck in you, overly identified in you. You know, that this whole security and safety from childhood too, even prior to age 12, like it's just this huge stuck place for a lot of adults that is a rite of passage and a part of ego development for a kid. But, you know, then as an adult, either they become overly identified with you. And oftentimes that comes because you as a voice are locked in the basement. And when we lock a voice in the basement, we give it magical powers. Is that what's happening with you?
I'm not necessarily locked in the basement. I think that I have, I've proven myself to be trustworthy on a number of occasions. And so she's afraid to let me stray too far away.
Okay. She finds some safety in you.
Yes.
Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's trying to control what others think of her. Who am I speaking to?
The one who's trying to control what others think of her.
So notice that you go hand in hand with this last voice that we spoke to. It's like worry leads to you.
Yes.
So how do you try to control what others think about Leslie?
I have Leslie work harder, more hours, produce better work, be a perfectionist, say yes to everything so that people can't function without her.
Sounds pretty good, like makes her more successful, okay? And then there's also a downside to all these voices. You know, how do you also hold her hostage, kind of make her suffer?
Well, I think she would like to put me back in the basement, and I'm too strong for her to, or she'd like to cut me loose because I'm too strong for her to get rid of. And I harm her because physically, there's only so many hours in a day, and so she's got to stay up late. She's got to be on the computer. She makes choices that I harm her by having her make choices that are not and always in her best interest.
Right. Now here's the thing. She didn't write me saying, I want to stop trying to control what others think. I want to stop caring about what others think. You know, she wrote me because she wants to recognize the difference between you two. You know, like when she's doing a body scan, when she decides that she's in a stuck place and she needs to check in, she was confused about being able to accurately identify which of the two of you is showing up for her. So there's the last voice, what others, you know, worry about what others think of her. And then there's the voice of you trying to control what others think of her. What is the difference between the two of you? It seems pretty dramatic, the difference.
I mean, I'm an active voice, and worry is a reactive or passive voice, I think.
Right. Like worry doesn't really result in anything except for more worry, and it's an internal experience. Whereas you are more external, you're action-oriented, you get her working harder. You know, I almost see that you just show up in her actions. It seems more, external maybe seems like the wrong word, but there's movement involved. You know, oftentimes when I'm speaking to the two of you, these two voices, the question more is about, you know, how do I get you guys to not play such a big role in her life? You know, is that what's on the table here, or does she just want to know the difference between the two of you?
I think that is definitely on the table, and I think that she thought that if she could better identify what she was dealing with, she'd have a better shot at feeling the feeling and then working the other steps to get through it.
Okay. The need for control is one experience. You know, there's like doing the four steps and we're like focusing on the worry. Again, I'm using the word focusing. I hate that. I do it myself. Feeling the worry. Like the four steps, can we just identify the worry? Can we feel the worry? Can we notice when we have resistance to the worry? And then can we just spend some time with it? You know, it's normal and natural to worry. And then there's the control. You know, it's normal and natural to try to want to control other people's experiences. Can we notice where we feel control in our bodies or wanting to control? Are we in resistance? We don't want to be a control freak. Like, is there some sort of stigma associated with that? And can we just spend some time just feeling how much we can, want to control the situation? And again, you know, I don't mention fear. And fear is, of course, kind of underneath all of this. But I think that the point is that we're getting to the point where we realize that this four-step art of fear method is for anything, you know, for control, for worry, for physical aches and pains. It doesn't matter what it is. If it's uncomfortable, you know, can we use the four steps for that? So let's just go through the rest of these, because she wanted to know the difference between worry about losing her job, worry about what somebody thinks of her, worry about the world ending due to climate change. Let's just kind of fire through these all, and then we'll get to the end and see what we come up with, okay?
Okay.
Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of worry of losing her job. Who am I speaking to?
The one who worries about losing her job.
All right. So just do your thing. Let's give you 20 seconds to just do your thing. We're not trying to turn up the dial on you or give you a steroid injection. Just go ahead and worry all you want about her losing her job. Okay, what's it like to be you?
It's not good.
What's not good? You're not good.
So I know we've been using worry, but that was fear.
Okay, fear of losing.
It's like a waterfall of fears that just cascade from that single worry.
Right, and then worry of not having enough money, and worry of losing the house, and right, worry of, like, you know, losing respect
of
right, right, like, you know, never getting another job again. And,
yep.
Right? All right. So can she just sit with you and feel you?
It's difficult. But for 20 seconds, she can.
For 20 seconds, she can. Okay. Why should she listen to you? I mean, not only will listening to you calm you down, but then there's the whole bonus step, like, you know, you have some insight.
Yeah, she should listen to me because she works for at a completely insane organization.
Right. So oftentimes people will trade money for a certain amount of fear. And, you know, it's, even just in things like when people call Kristen and say, oh, will you give this speech next month and we'll pay you this amount of money? It's like, okay, we'll give you X amount of dollars in exchange for you having to deal with this amount of fear. Like, all right, well, is it worth it, you know, to deal with this amount of fear for that amount of money? Yeah, okay. Or amount of emotional discomfort, physical discomfort, all of that and all that implies. And when there's a difficult work environment, you know, which sounds like she has, then you're going to be bigger. And there's still always the question, is it? And so that just paying attention to you, you know, she can assess whether it is or not. You know, you're very uncomfortable. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's trying to control whether or not, or how about, let's say, there's the voice of the one trying to control whether she loses her job or not, or the voice of the one who's trying to control her fear of whether she loses her job or not. Which one has more heat? Are you trying to control the fear, or are you trying to control losing or not losing of the job?
I'm trying to control the fear.
All right. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's trying to control fear of losing her job. Who am I speaking to?
The one who's trying to control the fear of losing her job.
Right. Right. And so notice that we're just going just increment by increment. You know, I use the analogy of like turning a radio dial too fast and it's just static. But if we just go one click at a time, you can finally hear some things. And the more we practice the four-step art of fear method, the more we begin to just kind of hone in on the feeling. Like, is this control? Is this fear? Is this worry? Like, you know, and that's how this game can serve us. So as the voice of the one who's trying to control fear regarding her job, just do your thing. You have full right to trying to control something as unpleasant and uncomfortable as fear. Ten more. When we do the method, we just want to be wherever we are and just feel whatever we feel. And if control is showing up, then so be it. You know, if resistance is showing up, then so be it. Frustration, if I don't want to feel this way, is showing up. Make it stop, any of that. We just want to spend some quality time with what's ever showing up in our hose. So what's it like to be you, given just full rein? Because, you know, the thing is, and I don't want to get too complicated, but if we try to control our attempts to control our fear, right, it just gets complicated. We just want to let whatever shows up, show up, and give it its rightful place in our lives. So what's it like for you to just be given your rightful place in her life right now for only 20 seconds?
Well, I'm not very good at my job of controlling the fear.
Right. It's frustrating for you, isn't it?
Very frustrating.
Right. You're probably better at controlling whether she gets to keep her job or not. Like, you know how to keep her job or not.
Right.
Work hard, you know, suck up to the right people, whatever, right?
Right, right.
Right. So externally focused, like just actions, action-oriented. But when you try to control anything internal, that's when things get frustrating.
Right.
Right. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who has fear of climate change and what that means about the world. Who am I speaking to?
The one who fears climate change, the world ending.
Now, the question that Leslie had is, what's the difference between all these voices? Like, how are you, the voice of the world ending, different from the fear of losing job and fear of what others think about her?
It's all the same except for the context. It's just it's the same. It feels the same.
It's the same sensation.
It's the same sensation. And the same uncertainty, the same desire to, the same fear of uncertainty.
Right. And that's why this four-step art of fear method just simplifies things so easily. It's like, just what am I feeling? You know, we don't need to know what it's about. You know, one day it may be about, oh, fear that my toe's going to turn gangrenous, and the next day it's fear of losing my job, and the next day it's fear of, you know, the future of the planet. The only thing that really matters is the feeling itself, and that's how we can just super simplify our lives. Can I spend some time with this feeling? You know, so why don't, you're the voice of the one who's afraid of the world ending, climate change, all of that. Why don't we just call you fear? Who am I speaking to?
Fear.
Right. Can we just let you be, spend some quality time with you, let you do your thing? 20 seconds. So as the voice of fear, how does it feel to just be singled out like this, talked to again?
It feels good. It feels free, liberating.
And there's a big difference between you and the voice of the one who's trying to control you, isn't there?
There is.
Right. And so her question seemed very simple to begin with, you know, whether I'm being able to identify accurately what voice I'm in, either the voice of the one who worries or the voice of the one who needs to control. I mean, it's very different energy. And the more we play this game, the more we can see how radically different that energy is. And then the second question is, what's the difference between worrying about what someone thinks about me versus losing my job versus world ending? You know, it really comes down to just you and that feeling of you showing up as worry, as anxiety, or just as fear itself, and her relationship with you. And this game, I say all the time, is a great way to compartmentalize our life, and the koan, the riddle, is to see how it serves us. Like, this game can really simplify things very quickly and bring in great clarity. Is there anything else you'd like to say, or allow me please to speak to the voice of Leslie. Who am I speaking to?
Leslie.
Do you have any clarifying questions, or did that help?
It helped a lot. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions or comments? So then let's go to another question from Leslie, and this will be the last question of the evening. She wrote, my second question would be that in addition to acknowledging, feeling, and honoring the 10,000 voices, I have also been reading a lot from Buddhist authors, especially Pema Chodron. Is that mud in my cup? And my answer is no, that's not the right analogy. Or is it more like milk to complement my tea? And my question to you, Leslie, is it depends. There are many different interpretations or forms of Buddhism. And actually what I teach is Buddhism. My teacher was Genpo Roshi, and he's a Zen Buddhist Roshi in the Soto lineage. But there's also Tibetan Buddhism. And I mean, there's just many different types of Buddhism, and it's all different interpretations of what the historical Buddha taught. And Zen is specifically is trying to feel what the Buddha felt. So I guess my question is, what does Pema Chodron teach?
Mostly what I've been reading is about letting go and choosing another path.
Okay, so letting go of choosing another path. So that is, I wonder if it isn't Tibetan Buddhism. I don't know enough about her. I think that she's a fine teacher. So there's basically three different ways to deal with fear. And I know that I think she wrote a book just called Fear. And there's the let go of choosing another path crowd. And then there's the crowd that, and my guess is that Pema is more along this line where fear is normal and natural. We need to accept it as part of, you know, the human experience. You don't want to repress it in any way, comma, but now you need to let go of it and choose another path. So it's like the first one, you know, comes after the comma. And then there's what I teach, which is if we try to let go of it, if we try to replace it with something more positive, then it'll just persist. And, you know, like you can't really let go of fear. It's not like CO2. It's more like blood. Like you can't let go of your blood. It's part of your biology. You can't let go of your biology. Choosing another path too oftentimes is spiritual bypassing. So I, you know, you asked if it's mud in your cup. No. Is it more like milk to complement your tea? I wouldn't say that that's it either. But I will say that when it comes to fear, you really have to pick one path or another. And let me give you an example. I had an athlete that was trying to make it to the last Olympics, and he called me when he had only a month left to qualify, and he was qualifying, I think, fifth, and he needed to be at least third or better to make it. And he had been working with a sports psychiatrist that was teaching let it go and choose another path and do breathing exercises and all of that. And then I taught him the four steps and making friends with fear, and I helped broker a conversation with him and his fear. And so what started to come up over time is that he was doing both. You know, he was both, because the other stuff works. It helps, absolutely. Otherwise, it wouldn't be taught. And then, like, in the morning, he would be doing breathing exercises to let it go, and then in the afternoon, he would be doing the four steps, Art of Fear. It's like, the thing about that is you really have to pick one or the other, because it sends mixed messages to fear. You know, I love to personify fear, where it's like, okay, I'm going to spend a whole bunch of time trying to get rid of you and replace you with something positive and let you go, you know, so that you can't affect my performance. And then in the evening, I'm going to spend some time honoring you. I mean, yeah, okay, that could work, but it sends mixed messages. And it's kind of like, let me give that analogy later. You know, I really think that if you're going to do one or the other, you should just pick one and just do it. You know, like when you drink tea, just drink tea. You know, when you eat a sandwich, just eat a sandwich. Don't try to drink tea and eat a sandwich at the same time, because it just gets muddled. You know, you lose the flavor of each. You don't have any chance to savor either of them. And it's just a big, blurry memory of, like, effort that isn't targeted or focused. Now, I found that, for me, what I teach works better for me. That's not to say that what Pema teaches isn't better for you. But I really do think that it should be one or the other. And if what she teaches doesn't work or doesn't work well enough, then try what I teach. And if you try what I teach and it doesn't work well or well enough, then practice what she teaches. But do it one at a time. Don't do it at the same time. Does that make sense?
Yep, it does.
Yeah, until you find the one that works for you. And does anybody have anything else to say about that or question about that? And the last thing I'll say is, you know, when you pick a practice, or even if you pick a spiritual tradition, or even if you pick a religion for that matter, you know, if you have 10 religions going at once, or 10 spiritual practices going at once, or 10 approaches to fear going at once, like, you can dig 10 feet down here, and then you move over here, and then you dig 10 feet down, and then you move over here, and you dig 10 feet down. And, you know, it seems like a lot of effort, and you're making progress, and you're going in kind of a little deep on something. Or you could just pick one spot and just dig 100 feet, and then 200 feet, and then dig all the way to China, you know. It's personal preference. Like, you can practice one for a month and practice another for a month and just only go 10 feet deep. Or you can devote your life to one practice. And for me, I've devoted my life to Zen Buddhism, the Soto lineage, which is different from the Buddhism practice that Pema teaches. And she has obviously dug down to China in her practice. I'm not quite at China myself, but, you know, it again comes back always and forever to personal preference and where you are in your life. And just the fact that you guys even have a practice is a win. But the question is, do you want to spend some time going deeper and deeper and deeper with this? And I think at least for this month we do. And again, it's personal preference. So that's it. Any comments or questions from anyone before we say goodbye? As always, submit questions in advance for next week's call. And thank you very much. I put my hands together. I bow to you all. Thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me tonight.
Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.